What do lottery winners and the children of the Exodus have in common? Who are the people that bet on the lottery, that buy lottery tickets? Let me ask you, how many of you think a billionaire bets on the lottery? How many of you think people have $200 or $300 million in the bank buy a lottery ticket? Very few. Almost nobody. Why? Well, first of all, they don't need the money. Second of all, they know better. They could bet their entire fortune and not win, because it's like 176 million to one. So who bets on the lottery? People who are poor, people who want a dream, people who have a hope. They think maybe they can hit it big. They have all these dreams. If I win all this money, I can get out of my circumstances. I can get out of the wretchedness of my life. I could get change it over. I am enslaved to my physical surroundings. I've never traveled. I can't get a new car when I want to. And all that. So these are the people that keep throwing in $5, $10, $20 to hope that their lives will change dramatically. Most cases, they never win. Now, somebody wins. You know, I hear this argument. People say, well, you know, somebody's got to win. Well, let me ask you a question. Somebody's going to die today. You want it to be you? No. But you think it will be you? No. But somebody's going to die today. I mean, this is the kind of thing that people talk about. Somebody's going to win. Somebody's going to die. And they think because somebody's going to win, that may be them. Well, somebody's going to get in an accident today. Somebody's going to die on the road today. There are people going to get sick today. There are people going to find out they have cancer today. But you don't want it to be you. One chance out of 176 million. So the people who bet on the lottery are usually people who are in some form of economic slavery. They don't have enough. They are trying to get out of their circumstances. They want to give themselves some form of hope. But what do the lottery winners? Now, the person wins it. Now, I'm not talking about the people who just shove it in there and never win. They throw their money down and they never win. I'm talking about the person who hits it, who wins it. What does that person and the children of Israel, the children of the Exodus, have in common? Well, let's read a passage here in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 16, verse 3 first. So you just see this. I want you to understand this phrase because people misunderstand it. You shall not eat leavened bread with it, talking about the Passover. 7 days you shall eat with it unleavened bread, the bread of affliction, for you came out of the land of Egypt in haste. So that you may remember all the days of your life, the day when you came out of the land of Egypt. Now, it's called the bread of affliction. So people often think that we're being afflicted by this bread. This bread is torturous to eat. First of all, it's not torturous to eat. I've eaten unleavened bread most of the year, because I tend to have an allergy toward too much yeast and yeast bread. So I tend to eat unleavened bread most of the year. So it's not torturous to eat. To eat crackers, to eat matzos, it's not torturous. That's not affliction. It's called the bread of affliction because of the affliction that happened to them, and they had to escape from that affliction quickly. Take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 26 and verse 7. And when we cried unto the eternal God of our fathers, the eternal heard our voice and looked on our affliction and on our labor and on our oppression. He looked on our affliction, our torture. The people of Israel were afflicted. They were captured. They were slaves. They couldn't even keep the Sabbath. Couldn't keep it. They'd like to rest. You know, now people have a chance to rest one day a week. Oh, no, I don't want to rest. But let's say somebody made you work. You have to get in there and you have to work and you're not going to rest. What would you do then? They couldn't rest. So all of a sudden now, they are freed from their plight. God takes them out of that affliction, takes them out of that misery. Just like the lottery winners. They're out of their misery. Now, they've got money that they never had before, and we're not bound by any of these other things that restricted us before. We can have all the cars we want. We can have all the food we want. We can have all the travel we want. We can have all the things we want, things we never had before. I couldn't afford that kind of tequila before. I couldn't afford that kind of champagne before. I couldn't afford that kind of bottle of wine before. Now I can have it. Now I can have anything I want. So, guess what? They start helping themselves to it. Now we're freed. We're freed from the plight of the circumstances. We're freed from the powers outside of us. No masters, no schedule, nobody telling us what to do. They're set free. Now, they never knew about the Sabbath. They didn't keep the Sabbath for years. You know, the children of Israel were in Egypt quite a number of years. And they couldn't keep the Sabbath. And you think of slave, hey, I'm sorry, sir. I'm not going to work today. This is a Sabbath. I have to rest. You know, a couple of whacks on the back with a whip tends to get you up and going, you know. Thinking somebody's going to knock your head off or beat you or cut your hand off or something is going to get you up and going. So, no, they didn't rest. So when you come to the book of Exodus, chapter 16, all of a sudden God, you know, first of all, they're out in this wilderness. Now they escaped from Egypt. They're free. They're out in the wilderness and God is going to feed them. Because there's hardly anything out there. There's no, you know, you can't get a lot of fresh vegetables out there or good things. So God's going to feed them. So in Exodus chapter 16, dropping down to verse 14. When the layer of the dew evaporated, it came in the evening. First of all, they asked for meat. They asked for quails. And he sent quails and they ate. Well, when the quails all left, then they had this thing called manna. They went, well, what is this stuff? And in verse 15, the sons of Israel saw it. They said, well, to one another, what is it? The word manna means what? What is this? That's what the word manna means. What is it? For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, it is the bread which the Eternal has given you to eat. It's bread. You can grind it up. You can make it. It's kind of, you know, there are certain basic substances. Like if you go into Hawaii, they have a poi. I don't know if you've ever been there and you've seen poi. Many of the Asian groups, they have what they call, the soy stuff, whatever you call it, that they make. They mix it and put it in with everything. You know, you can have it basic. It's a kind of a basic substance. And I think this is what it was. With a guy, they could break it, they could grind it, they could fry it, they could, you know, roast it. They could do all kinds of ways to eat it. All kinds of ways to eat it. So it became the manna. It's called, what is it? This is what the Eternal commanded. Now in verse 16, he's introducing them to the Sabbath. Gather it, every man, as much as he should eat. You shall take an omer apiece. Now, just get an omer. That's plenty of food for you, an omer apiece, according to the number of persons each of you has in his tent. The sons of Israel did so, and they gathered as much, you know, some much and some little, based on how many people you had living with you. And when they measured it with an omer, he who had gathered much had no excess, and he who had gathered a little had no lack. So they got their daily portion. They got all that they needed. Every man gathered as much as he should eat. Moses said to them, let no man leave any of it until the morning. In other words, you can't store this. You can't put it in a jar. You can't save it. You can't freeze it. We didn't have any freezers, of course. But you can't store it over. You can't keep it. But they did not, verse 20. We don't take orders from you, Moses. Moses said, don't try to keep any over. Just get enough for today. They did not listen. In verse 20, they didn't listen to Moses, so some left part of it until the morning. Let's keep it. Oh, I won't have to go out and gather it tomorrow. I'll just keep it over, gather a lot. I won't eat it all. I'll keep it for tomorrow. We'll have breakfast with it tomorrow. And it bred worms and began to become foul. And Moses was angry with them. They gathered it morning by morning, every man as much as he should eat. But when the sun grew hot, it would melt. It would kind of like dissolve. Now on the sixth day, they gathered, verse 22, twice as much bread, two omers for each one. Now they'll go out and gather twice as much on the sixth day, which would be Friday. When all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, and they said to him, this is what the Eternal meant. Tomorrow is the Sabbath observance, a holy Sabbath to the Eternal. Bake what you will bake, boil what you will boil, and all that is left over put aside to be kept until morning. And so they put aside it until morning as Moses had ordered, and it did not become foul. It did not get worms in it. Moses said, eat today, for today is the Sabbath to the Eternal. Today you will not find it in the field. In other words, gather twice as much on Friday. Keep it over. It's the one day you can keep it over, and it won't breed worms or stink. So he tells them to do that. Now Moses says to them, 6 days, you know, you won't find it out there today. On the Sabbath, it's not there. 6 days you shall gather it. But on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will be none. Verse 27. And it came about on the seventh day that some of the people... Now, you're not going to tell us what to do. We're free now. We don't take orders from anybody. We're going to go out and see for ourselves. So off they go to gather. They found none. They found none. Then the Eternal said to Moses, how long do you refuse, do your people refuse to keep my commandments and my instructions? Well, we're free. We don't have to listen to anybody. We're free. We can do what we want. And you know, part of the problem is freedom. Both people, what do the winners of the lottery and the children of the Exodus have in common? They had to deal with freedom. They had to deal with it. And they didn't know how to deal with it. Because there are a lot of people. Now think about people. Think of some examples. I know people who've had their kids, you know, with them. Their kids were very obedient. All of a sudden they send them off to college. The kids get to college and now, hey, my parents aren't here. Hey, my parents aren't telling me what to do. Hey, I don't have to listen. I can stay up as late as I want. I can go out and, you know, and drink as much as I want. I can go out and party as much as I want. I can go out and do this. I can go out and do that. And so I don't have anybody telling me, as my parents did, get in there and go ahead and study. I'm now free. And while free to do what? Free for what? And now you see people drinking too much, taking drugs, doing this, getting involved in sex, doing this, doing that, and ruining their lives. And there are many kids that go off to college and all of a sudden just really decompensate. They just get into a pall of not knowing what to do and get addicted to something else. And we'll talk about that in a minute. College kids, people who win the lottery. There are people that just go crazy when they win the lottery. I can drink as much as I want. I can have anything I want. I can do what I want. And they have no boundaries. They have no self-discipline. They don't know how to handle it. There was a study showing the people who win the lottery, how it changed their lives, mostly for the worse. It hurt them. They got all this freedom and they don't know what to do with it. They don't know how to handle it. You have to know how to handle freedom. Now in chapter 11, you'll see how, you know, we don't have anybody telling us what to do, you know, and now they're free. So they don't even have enough self-discipline. So in chapter 11 of Numbers, I'm going to read Numbers 11 and beginning in verse 5. Now here they begin to gripe. Okay, so the rabble was among them. They began to gripe, and they, we remember what we had in Egypt, and it was good, and then we had all this good stuff, and we had fish in Egypt, we had vegetables in Egypt, and now we remember all those cucumbers and melons and leeks and onions and all that. But now our appetite is gone. There's nothing at all to eat except this, what is it, stuff? This manna. We don't have anything. They're mad. Now the manna was like coriander seed, and it appeared like that of vellum. And the people would go about and gather it and grind it between two millstones, or beat it into a mortar, or boil it, or with a pot, or make cakes of it. You see how many ways they had. And the taste of it was like the taste of cakes baked with oil. Well, that wouldn't be a bad taste, but again, you know, after a while, you get tired of it. You get tired. And when the dew fell on the camp at night, the manna would fall with it. Now Moses heard the people weeping throughout the families, each man at the door of his tent. And the anger of the Eternal was kindled greatly, and Moses was displeased. And Moses said to the Eternal, "Why have you been so hard on your servant," meaning him, "and why have I found favor in your sight that you have had laid this burden of all this people on me?" I had to deal with these people. Now, no, they couldn't speak up to their masters, but they're yelling at me all the time. "Get me this. I want more fish. I want quail. I want meat. Was I conceived? You know, was it I who conceived this people? Was it I who brought them forth? And you should say to me, 'Carry them in your bosom,' like a nurse carries an infant, to the land which you have sworn to, you know, you swore to their fathers? Where am I to get meat? They all want meat now. Where am I going to get it? For they weep before me, saying, 'Give us meat to eat.'" They're tired. You know, if you eat this one thing all the time, you get, you know, you want something different. "I am alone. I alone am not able to carry all this people because it is too burdensome for me. So if you're going to deal with me like this, you know, please kill me now. You know, kill me. Just kill me now. If I found favor in your sight, do not let me see my wretchedness." I'm miserable with these people. They're yelling at me. They want to kill me. You know, there were plots to kill Moses. And some people were going to lead others back. If we just kill Moses, we'll go back to Egypt where we had all these good things. Even though they were slaves, now they want to go back to slavery. They don't know how to handle freedom, so they want to go back to slavery. "The Lord said, therefore, to Moses, 'Gather for me 70 men,'" and so on, "and the elders, and I'm going to come down, I'm going to speak to them, and I'm going to tell them," and so on and so on. And so, you know, he gives them, in chapter 11, you'll see, he gives them the meat. And then, of course, God got so angry with them because they were so greedy. You know, everybody's grabbing, you know, just you know, and when the meat was still in their mouth, he slayed a bunch of them. Because they were just, they could not stop their lust. And they, and again, in captivity, they couldn't complain. Now, what did they do when they broke out? They got there and they wanted, you know, an Aaron. And they, you know, Moses was gone up to the mountains. You remember? You remember the story of the golden calf? And they say to Aaron, "Make us gods. Like, you know, tell us what gods, what's our God look like? Make us a god." So he says, "Give me all your gold." And they gave him the gold. How'd they get the gold? Do you remember how they got the gold? They went to the Egyptians. And they asked, before they left that night, which was the night of last night, you know, this, and last night was the anniversary of they leaving at midnight, and off they go that night. Why do you think there's a full moon? Why does God have that full moon? Well, it's pretty hard to see your way in a desert if there's not a full moon. They didn't have searchlights, spotlights, flashlights like we have today, so the full moon lit their way. And off they took off by night as they left Egypt. And what did they do? Before that, a couple of days before, they're all saying, "Hey, you know, we're supposed to go. You know, I've served you a long time. You know, I mean, you never paid me anything. I was your slave. How about giving me some jewelry?" You know, and so God gave them favor in the sight of the Egyptians and all these plagues. Take this, you people, just be gone. You know, we're happy to have you go because your God is, you know, destroying our nation here with all these plagues. Here, take these silver, take the gold, take the diamonds, take. And so they all leave with all the silver and gold. So Aaron says, "Give me some gold. Give me enough gold and we'll make you." And he designed it in this golden calf. And then, of course, the people started running around having all kinds of things. And the Bible talks about this in Exodus chapter 32. And this is what it says. I'm going to read verse 8, chapter 32, verse 8. "They have quickly turned from the way I commanded them. They made themselves an image of the calf. They bowed down to it, sacrificed to it, and said, 'Israel, this is your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt.'" In Exodus 32 and verse 9, and I read this from the Christian Standard Bible goes like this. The Eternal said to Moses, I have seen this people. They're stiff-necked. Now, all of a sudden, they get stubborn. They can't get stubborn in front of their masters in Egypt because you get beat up. You'll get smacked around. But now they can get stiff-necked. Now we're stubborn. And in verse 25, the Bible says, Moses saw that the people were out of control. They had freedom, but now the Bible used that phrase, out of control. I'm going to read it in several different translations. This is Exodus chapter 32, verse 25 in the Christian, the Common English Bible book. Moses saw that the people were out of control because Aaron had let them get out of control, making them an easy target for their enemies. In the English Revised Version, it goes like this. And when Moses saw that the people were broken loose, for Aaron had let them loose. They're running around like a bunch of cattle, just running all over the place. You remember who you worship? You're like it. They were like the cattle they were worshiping. And in the New English Translation, it goes like, Moses saw that the people were running wild. What do you think? Kids go to college and now they have no restraint. They've never learned freedom. Parents, sometimes you have to be careful. You get too strict with your kids and you never let them have any freedom. And next thing you know, when they break away from you, they don't know what to do with it. And so here it is. They were running wild for Aaron had let them get completely out of control, causing derision from their enemies. You know, people would laugh at them. You're crazy. What's wrong with you? You're just crazy. What do the lottery winners and the children of Israel coming out of Egypt have in common? They have to deal with freedom. Take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 12. The Apostle Paul said this. It's a very big statement. I'm reading it from the Common English Bible. And it goes like this. I have the freedom to do anything. I think the King James says, all things are lawful for me. But they translate, I have the freedom to do anything. But not everything is helpful. I have the freedom to do anything, but I won't be controlled by anything. Some years ago, I had come to a conclusion that smoking was not a sin. You can't attribute smoking as a spiritual sin. It's not. If you want to smoke, it's not a spiritual sin. It's not an evil that you're going to have to, repent of terribly. It's just a physical thing. No more than eating too much cake. No more than drinking too much soda. No more than it's harmful to your body. But it's not a spiritual sin. And people, oh no, you can't tell people that smoking's not a sin, because as soon as you tell people smoking's not a sin, guess what people are going to do? Well, what are they going to do? They're going to smoke. Now, I didn't believe it was a spiritual sin, but I don't smoke. I don't think it's a spiritual sin for me to drink sodas, but I don't drink them. I don't believe it's a spiritual thing, a sin to do a lot of stupid things. I have the freedom, Paul said, to do anything, but not everything is smart. Not everything is helpful. Not everything is useful. You got freedom, but I have the freedom to stay up all night. Who's going to stop me from staying up all night? Well, Molly will give me a couple of smacks, but other than Molly. Who's going to stop me from staying up all night? I can stay up all night if I want, but it's not smart. Why do I want to stay up and lose all this sleep? I'm tired. I get tired and hurt my health. What's the point? I have the freedom to do everything, but not everything is helpful. I have the freedom to do anything, but not I won't be controlled. Now, here's the trouble. You can do a lot of things, and next thing you know, those things are controlling you. Smoking is controlling a lot of people. That nicotine and that smoke, it begins to make you the slave, begins to make you the problem, and you now are enslaved by it. You can drink too much, and that becomes you become the slave of that. You can eat too much, and you can become addicted to it, to eating too much. You can do a lot of things and become addicted to them. You have freedom, but you've got to watch your freedom. You've got to use some self-control. So here's the point. In Galatians chapter 5, beginning in verse 1, it was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and do not be subject to a yoke of slavery. And here's the almost paradox about freedom. You have the freedom, but if you use it wrongly, you're right back into slavery. And there are people that would love to go back to slavery because it's safer than being free. I don't have to use any smarts. I don't have to use my mind. I don't have to use self-control. If I have to be free, then I have to use my own judgment. I have to use good sense. Just because you can smoke doesn't mean you should smoke. Just because it's not a sin, don't go doing things that are stupid. That'll enslave you. It becomes a sin once you're enslaved. So in Galatians chapter 5, verse now dropping down to verse 13, for you were called to freedom, brethren. We're called to freedom. Now listen what he warns us. Only do not turn your freedom into an opportunity for the flesh. That is, the flesh being the lower side of your nature, the sinful side of your being, the sinful side of your mind. Don't turn that freedom into and give your sinful side the opportunity. But through love, serve one another. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word, that is, in this statement, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, take care that you are not consumed by one another. But I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not carry out the desire of the flesh. For the flesh sets its desire against the Spirit against the flesh. For these are in opposition to one another, so that you may not do the things that you please. So Paul, free. In fact, as he makes that argument, you know, when Peter is on the church expense, these others are on all the expenses of the church, and they're getting salary and all that, and Paul says, you know, am I not free? This is 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 1. Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? Are you not my work in the Lord? But dropping down to verse 19, same chapter, 1 Corinthians 9, verse 19. For though I am free from all men, I have no obligations, nobody controls me. Listen to what he said. I have made myself a slave to all. A servant, a slave, so that I may win more. I want to win more people. I'm free from them, but I've made myself a slave to them. There's a voluntary slavery to serve people. And what does he appreciate? What does Paul really appreciate? He appreciates when you do something out of the free exercise, a good deed out of the free exercise of your will. Look at Philemon. I think it's chapter 1. There's only one chapter of Philemon. And in verse 14, Paul says, you know, I wish I could keep this slave. Remember, Philemon had a slave run away. Paul met him in Rome. And Paul said, he's been so helpful to me. He's done so much for me. I wish I could keep him here. But, verse 14, but without your consent, I do not want to do anything, so that your goodness would not be in effect by compulsion. In other words, I'm not going to put pressure on you to do it. Your goodness, I want to come from your own free will. When you do it, not because you're commanded to do it. When you do it, not because you think, well, you know, or restrain yourself because you think it's a sin. But you do it of your own free will. You do a good thing, whether you avoid something bad or you do something positive good. Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 5. Make sure your character is free from the love of money. The love of money can enslave you. The love of money can capture you. You can become its slave. So it's a funny thing about freedom. The children of Israel, now they're free. Yeah, they're free from all these taskmasters, but what are they dealing with now? They're dealing with themselves. They're dealing with being slave to their own lusts, slave to their own ways. What are the people who win the lottery dealing with? They're dealing with themselves now. Oh, yeah, I'm free. I paid off all my debts. You know, I want to travel. I want to drink. I want to have this. I want to have that. And now you just get enslaved to materialism. And sometimes they're so foolish that they're out of money almost, you know, such a short time after they got it. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 16. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 16. Act as free men. That is free people. Act as free people. Nobody's your boss. Nobody's your master except Jesus. Jesus is the only master. No human being. Act as free men and do not use your freedom as a covering for evil. Do not use it as a covering for evil, but use it as bond slaves of God. Now here's the rub. You're either a slave to sin or you're a slave to God. That's all there is. You're one way or the other. There is no 100% absolute freedom. They used to say when you talk about each individual, you're free. Your freedom ends where my nose begins. Because you don't have the freedom to come over to my part. Your freedom is restricted. You can't help yourself to my things. Look at Romans chapter 6. You'll see something here. Romans 6 and verse 6. I'm going to read it in a couple of translations here. Here's the New American Standard Version. Knowing this, that our old self was crucified with him. Remember how we are baptized and we buried the old self? Now the old self is crucified with him in order that our body of sin might be done away with. That is, made ineffective is what it means. So that we would no longer, listen to this phrase, no longer be slaves to sin. I'm going to read that in the New English Translation. We know that our old man was crucified with him so that the body of sin would no longer dominate us. The Greek word means it's now weakened. The body of sin is now weakened in us. It no longer dominates us so that we would no longer be enslaved to sin. You see, when you sin, you are sin's slave. When you obey sin, let's say you obey your lusts. We talked about that, about idolatry. What is idolatry? Idolatry is when you put something else before God. Putting your own thoughts, putting your own desires, putting your own wants before the wants and the truth and the way of God. So you become a slave to that. Romans 6 and verse 16, dropping down to verse 16. Listen to this statement. When you present yourselves to someone as slaves for obedience, you are slaves to the one whom you obey. It depends on who it is. Either sin resulting in death, or right, proper obedience resulting in righteousness. One way or the other, you're presenting yourself. Whether you say, well, look, I don't obey anybody. I just do what I want, when I want. Whatever I feel like doing is what I do. Well, then whatever you feel like doing is your master. Whatever you feel like doing, you're now enslaved to you. You're enslaved to your lust. You're enslaved to what you want to do when you want to do it. You're enslaved to your own lusts. Dropping down. See, you're slaves to the one you obey, whether it's sin or God or righteousness. Are you going to be a slave of righteousness or are you going to be a slave of sin? One leads to death, The other leads us to life. Romans 6, verse 20, dropping down four more verses. For when you were slaves of sin, you were free in regard to righteousness. Let me read that in the New English Translation. For when you were slaves of sin, you were free with regard to righteousness. Let me read that in the New International Version. When you were slaves to sin, you were free from the control of righteousness. You were free from control of righteousness. You didn't know. You're completely out of righteousness. You don't have to worry about righteousness because you're a slave of sin. Galatians chapter 4, verse 8. Formerly, when you did not know God, you were enslaved to those that by nature are no gods. He's telling the Galatians. They did not know God, so they were worshiping what? Things that were not God. The moon, they worshiped the moon, they worshiped the sun, they worshiped idols, they worshiped things they made, their hands made. By contrast then, and this is, I'm going to read this now from the McDonald Idiomatic Translation, Galatians 4, verse 8. By contrast, during the days when you were unacquainted with God, you were enslaved to natural phenomena that are not real deities. You were enslaved to something else. You're slave to idols. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 19. Peter here is talking about these false prophets, false teachers that had come into the church. They come in and they're promising them all this and promising them freedom. Listen to this, 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 19, promising them freedom while they themselves, the preachers, the ones that are, they themselves are the slaves of corruption. Now listen to this principle, brethren. For by what a man is overcome, by this he is enslaved. For by what a man is overcome, by this he is enslaved. I want to read it again in the New English Translation. Although these false teachers promise such people freedom, they themselves are enslaved to immorality. For whatever a person succumbs to that he is enslaved. So, yeah, I got all this money. I won the lottery. I've succumbed to my own lusts. I succumb to my own addictions. I succumb to wanting to have materialism. I succumb to all this now, and I'm enslaved to it. I'm not free anymore. I thought, boy, if I get all this money, I'm free. No, I'm not free. I'm just as bad off as I was. Worse off. In many cases, their worlds take a tumble, and they're worse off than they were when they didn't have all that money. Jesus had to explain this to the Pharisees and some of the people that were questioning him. And Jesus said it this way. I want you to read this statement in the book of John. John's Gospel, chapter 8, verse 34. Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits sin is the slave of sin." Think you're free? Commit sin, you're its slave. You're enslaved to it. Everyone who commits sin is the slave of sin. Let me read that in the New English Translation. Jesus answered them, "I tell you the solemn truth. Everyone who practices..." Now, there is a special difference here with this Greek word. "Everyone who practices sin is the slave of sin." Now, everybody sins. You know, you'll make a mistake here, you make a mistake here. The word has to do with repeated, continuous action in sin. Repeated, continuous action. The one whose lifestyle then is characterized by this repeated, continuous action is a slave to sin. Not that you just sin once, because, you know, we all make mistakes. You make mistakes, you sin, you do the wrong thing, you say it, you lose your temper. But if you continuously lose your temper, if you continuously do that, then you are practicing sin, and the one who is practicing. In John's gospel and in John's writings, in the letters of John, you'll see this form. He uses this particular form, a construction, which means an ongoing action. It's not just a one-time action. It means that you commit and continue to commit sin. Continuing. It's a continuous practice of it, not just a one-time thing. So the question is, what do the lottery winners and the children of the Exodus have in common? They both have to deal with freedom. They both have to watch the freedom they've been given. One broke out of economic freedom, the other broke out of slavery. Sometimes they go right back into it. And the question then for you and for me, what are we enslaved to? Paul says, I'm not going to be enslaved. I don't want anything. I'm free to do everything, but I'm not going to be enslaved by anything. I'm not going to be under the control of anything. What are you under control to? What do you just have to have? What is just dominating your life that you think, I can't live without that, I can't get along without it, I have to have it every time, all the time? What is it? What dominates your life so thoroughly that you have become its slave? God has set us free. He's made us free from sin and death. We need to stay free. We need to use our freedom wisely. You know, all things, we're free to do anything, but not everything is smart. What are you enslaved to?